Welcome to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson and Nick Whalen here from rotowire.com. Here with the next hour. We got a lot on our plate today. We're going to be talking a little NBA. A lot of happening last night. Another big slate tonight. We're going to get Nick's plays on that. We're going to talk a little bit about the Cognizant Classic. The play is underway. I was beginning the Florida swing. We've got some news in the NFL. Anthony Richardson maybe finding a new place, new home, and some baseball injury news. A lot to cover here today. Also, on the Progressive Guest Line, our good friend John McKechnie is going to join us, get his takes on this year's class. It's Combine Week. We'll be talking a little bit about the running backs this year. We're going to be talking about some of the QB in this draft class as well. We'll hit all that. But, Nick, let's start off talking a little bit about the NBA last night. Pistons win a game against the number one seeds. They beat the Thunder. They hang on for dear life. No Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in this game. At one point, I think six of their top scorers were hurt for the Thunder. So it's kind of a tricky spot there in terms of, you know, how to evaluate this, how good of a win this really was for the Pistons.
Yeah, you know, I still think this goes down as a quality win for Detroit. Now, there are obvious caveats here. No SGA, no Jalen Williams, no Alex Caruso, no Chet Holmgren, no Isaiah Hartenstein. We could keep going down the list. And, you know, it is interesting to me that OKC has been a lot more willing this season to pull back on some of its frontline guys, you know, on the second night of a back-to-back. We didn't necessarily see that as much last season when they were really making a big push for the one seed. But OKC takes another loss. They're now 45-15. And with the San Antonio Spurs, Jeff, picking up a win in Toronto last night, a game that did come down to the wire. Brandon Ingram had a chance to win it at the buzzer, ended up rimming out. Spurs are just two games back of OKC the rest of the way. And the Thunder have the second toughest remaining schedule in the NBA. Spurs are right in the middle of the pack. I believe they have the 16th toughest. And, you know, just the next month for OKC, it's just banger after banger in terms of premier opponents. We don't know exactly when SGA is going to be back. They're already listing him as doubtful for tomorrow night's game. You know, that could be two, three, four more games. So I think the chase for the one seed in the Western Conference is going to be really, really interesting the rest of the way. To me, that's more important for San Antonio than it is OKC. Obviously, the Thunder proved to themselves, to everyone last season, that they can make it through the Western Conference. So I think they feel fine, you know, if they do fall down to the two, but getting that one seed, getting home court advantage through the West playoffs, I think would be huge for San Antonio.
Yeah, absolutely. They have that confidence at the head to head. So that's always nice as well. So something to, you know, just to stash away there a little bit there. How, on the East side of things, I mean, you know, the Pistons, they've had, you know, big opponent after big opponent. You know, they beat the Knicks. They get beat pretty comfortably by the Spurs. They beat the Thunder. This spurring a lot of talk about Cade Cunningham for MVP. What's your take on the MVP race as regards to Cade Cunningham?
Look, I think Cade Cunningham should very much be in the mix. I still would side with Jokic or SGA, assuming they meet the game's minimum. You know, Jokic, I believe, can miss two more games. SGA has a little bit more wiggle room, but again, we'll see how many more games he misses with this current injury. And then if OKC, you know, were to have some sort of cushion as we get closer to the end of the year, you know, would they pull back on SGA? I don't think there's going to be a huge impetus necessarily to make sure he wins this award, considering he won it last year and they just won the title. But Cade Cunningham to me is a very clear number three. And I think what makes the MVP debate a lot more interesting now than it was a month or 2 months ago is that, you know, the numbers between SGA and Cade Cunningham, the counting stats are relatively similar. The advanced numbers do heavily favor SGA. And I think that matters more than it did 10 years ago in the MVP voting. Writers do pay attention to things like BPM and VORP and whatnot. But the trump card that SGA was holding early in the season, which was, okay, my team is 23-1. We might win 70 games. That's the ultimate tiebreaker. The Thunder don't really have that anymore, right? I mean, they're like a game and a half better than the Detroit Pistons on the season. And again, if SGA misses enough time where, you know, Cade Cunningham plays 77 games and SGA plays like 70, the records are similar, you know, maybe OKC does fall to the two seed, that's where we could see, you know, some voters start to overlook the numbers and maybe go more toward the narrative with Cade Cunningham, because the big feather that Cade has in his cap, Jeff, is that he's doing this with Jalen Duren and Tobias Harris and Duncan Robinson and Asar Thompson as his surrounding pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. And that does dictate that, you know, we don't have a, you know, voter fatigue situation this year because, you know, Jokic missed so many games. SGA has missed so many games, makes it easier to kind of go steer in a different direction. especially if SGA continues to miss more games on top of this. Like you said, the number one seed isn't super critical for the Thunder. And I'm guessing for SGA, he's more trying to gear up for the playoffs too. The MVP may not be right. super critical to him as well. So, you know, that's why you're seeing same of this load management. Let's talk about the other big game last night. That was the Spurs beating the Raptors the Bucks beating the Cavs. Spurs Raptors was huge too, but I want to talk Bucks Cavs just because A, the win for the Bucks and what it does for them trying to stay involved, maybe get into the play-in. The Cavs kind of their momentum slowing down. And most importantly, James Harden. We got the news breaking after our show yesterday that he has the fractured right thumb. He does plan to play through it, but obviously didn't play last night.
Yeah, this was kind of a punt game for the Cavaliers, who still almost ended up winning on the road in Milwaukee. But Bucks have now won 8 of their last 10 games, Jeff. And like this time last week on the show, you know, I was posing the question, what are the Bucks doing? You're stuck in the middle. You're probably not going to make the play-in. You've won too many games to feel good about your chances of tanking your way into a top 4 or 5 pick. I think the Bucks have shown us what direction they are choosing. You know, they think Giannis is going to be back probably in the next week or so, in the next 2 or 3 games, and they want to make a push for the play-in and see what happens. Now, I understand that considering how many games they've won and what's happened over the last few weeks. Again, they're 8-2 in their last 10. You could sell me on Milwaukee making it out of the play-in. You can't really sell me on Milwaukee making a playoff run, but I think this is all about, you know, kind of appeasing Giannis Antetokounmpo. That's what the entire franchise is about right now. And if Giannis is telling them behind the scenes, hey, when I'm healthy, I want to come back. I want to play every night. I want to be competitive. I don't want to be sitting on the bench while we're just tanking our way and crossing our fingers come lottery night. I think this is an audition for a lot of these Bucks players for next season. And they want to build some momentum down the stretch, which frankly is a little bit refreshing, Jeff, with all the tanking talk that's been kind of engulfing the NBA over the last couple of weeks, to see a team say, no, we had an opportunity to tank, and instead we're going to try to win as many games as we can. They were given a gift, of course, last night with no Mitchell, no Harden, no Evan Mobley for the Cavaliers. But I think the Bucks have very clearly chosen their direction. On the Harden thing, I'm not panicking quite yet. You know, it's interesting that we got the news that he has a fracture in his thumb. It's very much worth noting this is his right thumb. James Harden, of course, is left-handed. So this is something in theory that he'd be able to play through without surgery. You know, they also listed him as questionable for last night's game. He did not end up playing, of course, and I think maybe they would have held him out no matter what. I don't think we're going to see a long-term absence for James Harden. You know, he is somebody that has been extremely durable throughout his career. You know, even though the way we talk about James Harden is, you know, questioning his effort and things like that, the guy plays games. The guy does not get hurt very often. And when he's hurt, he often plays through it. So I don't think this is going to be a major factor for the Cavs the rest of the way. If I'm Cleveland, if I'm Harden, I'm just thankful this is the right thumb and not the left thumb.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I think that was a great point there. A great point about him being durable in the regular season as well. It's just it's just the playoff track record is why everyone has that negative image of James Harden for sure. And also the way he's manufactured trades to get out of teams too. I guess that would probably be something that people would hold against him as well. We previewed the Cognizant Classic yesterday with Len Hochberg. Let's get you an update on that right now. The leaders, we got two of them right now at -8, Nico Echevarria and Austin Smotherman. Echevarria's round is done. Smotherman is on 18 right now as we speak. You've already seen their odds jump up quite a bit. Echevarria was 40-1 to win the tournament going in, which is actually a reasonable expectation, not a favorite, but still in there. Smotherman was a pretty big long shot at 100-1. You know, those odds have shortened quite a bit. Now it's 4.5-1 for Echevarria, 7.5-1 for Smotherman. Starting the Florida swing, always a little bit different there. Should be some low scores going in this tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to find an updated number on, you know, over under winning score. I know it was 16.5 coming into the tournament. Like you said, we got two guys sitting at 8 under already. And, you know, as you'd expect, both of the leaders now making significant leaps in terms of the updated odds. Echevarria +470 right now to win the tournament at DraftKings. Smotherman at +660. Your guy, Michael Thorbjornsson, Jeff, at close to 14-1 right now is the odds update live. Keith Mitchell, 21-1. Rasmus Højgaard, 28-1. Kind of underscoring what we talked about with Len yesterday with how wide open this field is.
Absolutely. We're going to talk a little NFL, but first, are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as a betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire gives you the real tools the pros use. Rankings, projections, breaking updates, and data that never sleeps. Whether you're setting fantasy lineups, making picks, or placing bets, RotoWire's award-winning insights give you a real edge. Get started today at rotowire.com and use promo code VEASAN for 15% off any RotoWire product. Nick, we woke up to a trade this morning for the Titans and the Jets. Then during our XM show, heard a little bit about the Colts and Anthony Richardson mutually agreeing to go seek out a trade. Let's talk about Richardson real quick. Very curious to see what team takes the plunge on him, because there's no shortage of teams that needs a quarterback right now.
Oh, no question. And look, I mean, I don't know if you're trading for Anthony Richardson with the idea that he's just going to step in and be your starter in 2026, but you contrast this to some of the other, we'll call them trade eligible quarterbacks in the NFL. Like we talked yesterday about, you know, what the kind of mountains you're going to have to move to trade Tua Tagovailoa on that contract. You're going to have a similar issue if you're trying to trade Kyler Murray, if you're the Arizona Cardinals. Like in theory, trading Anthony Richardson is a lot easier. He's a much easier player to get off of. He's a much easier player to bring in if you are that team. So I don't necessarily think we see a team say, all right, we're bringing in Richardson. He's going to be our guy. That's what we're rolling with for 2026. But I think there are plenty of teams, even teams with established quarterbacks right now, that would be willing to take a flyer on developing Anthony Richardson, maybe not even to be a future starter, but to be somebody that you could flip again if you're able to rebuild his value.
Yeah, exactly. We do have that little nagging point. Can he have proper vision? And that's one of the things that he did not have after that injury last year. Win total for the Colts is currently set at 8.5 at the DraftKings Sportsbook for the over-under on that. We're going to be talking NBA plays and props when we come back. Later, we're going to have John McKechnie. This is Prop Points.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you'll get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson back with you. Finishing out the show, a little fantasy baseball talk. We'll, of course, give you our best bets of the night in the NBA. Quick update on the Cognizant Classic. Austin Smotherman in the clubhouse as your solo leader. What's up, a 62? So he's at 9-under. Nico Echevarria at 8-under. Taylor Moore and Jackson Suber sitting at 4-under. So Smotherman now your betting favorite to win the tournament. Still plenty of golf to be played, of course, down in Florida over the next 3 days. Jeff, let's get into some late round values at starting pitcher as we give you some fantasy baseball advice here on Prop Points. And I think we need to start by defining what exactly do we mean by late round. That could vary league to league, draft to draft. What do you consider a late round pick?
Yeah, and I think that's a great question. I think it depends a little bit on the type of league you're playing in here, but for our purposes, we're going to say anything after pick 200. In a 12-team league, obviously, it's going to be your fifth or sixth pitcher. Maybe in a 15-team league, you're talking about your fourth or fifth pitcher, but at least then, and as we're going to dig in deeper here, you're going to see we're going to have some really fungible players here that if it doesn't work out, we can move on. And the whole point here is trying to find some upside that we can go get our strikeouts, find some high-ceiling guys, and if it doesn't work out, If they do get hurt again, well, we move on to the next guy. We're not inexorably tied to him there. You know, as much as I love Emmett Sheehan, he doesn't qualify as late round in my mind. So that's why I'm trying to set it there. It's an arbitrary number to be sure, but we're going to go after pick 200.
Okay, so there we go. Guys going after pick 200 on average in fantasy baseball this season. Let's start out with Jack Flaherty in Detroit.
Yes, Jack Flaherty was one of the least lucky pitchers in baseball last year. ERA estimators suggest that his ERA should have been a full run lower than it was at his 4.64 ERA. And you're going to see a continuing theme here that I like tracing to find the strikeout guys. Strikeouts minus walks in particular is really interesting. With Flaherty, his walks did tick up a little bit, but still 27.6 K percentage. Almost a 20 K minus walk percentage of 20. That's a magic. That's like a level there where you're looking really strong. At 19, he's still very strong. He's a great target, I think. factor in that they have the Tigers should have a better bullpen and a little bit more run support. You went only had 8 wins last year. Don't be paying too close attention to the wins. Look at the components that build up his numbers there. The strikeouts is where it's at. I think this is a good target, especially at pick 223.
Shane McClanahan of the Tampa Bay Rays, currently penciled in as their number 3 starter, but I think we'd be remiss if we did not mention, Jeff, that McClanahan has not pitched in a major league game since 2023. So what's the sell here?
The sell here is that you're trying to get a near ace level guy at a very discounted rate. Again, yeah, you're right. The injuries are a concern here. Did have a live bullpen session today through 2 innings for that. Going to make his spring training debut on Tuesday. We'll be watching those radar reports, watching the results of that start very closely. Not just that start, but as he works his way into spring training. But this is a pitcher that you're getting in like the low 3s, high 2s in terms of ERA, very low whip. This is one where it's important. If he's not your third pitcher, he's your 4th, 5th, or 6th pitcher, all the better. That's what we're gaining here. Keep in mind too, that the Rays are going back to the Trop after playing in Steinbrenner Field last year, big improvement in the pitching environment for the pitcher.
All right. Next on the list, Grayson Rodriguez going closer to pick 260 on average this season. Now with the LA Angels, you're getting a discount on Rodriguez, like a lot of guys on this list, Jeff, but that discount comes for a reason.
Yeah, it comes because of the injuries. Missed all of last season with injuries to his elbow and his lat. Got traded to the Angels for Taylor Ward. Does make me nervous that he's pitching for the Angels. The Angels have a way of lowering everybody around them. But again, the strikeouts is what I'm looking for here. 25% 2 years or 3 years ago, 26.5% his last full season with the Orioles. I am a little concerned about the defense behind him. You're hoping you get a full healthy season of Zach Neto. That would help in terms of that. But at the same time, this is a guy that we were talking about as one of the top 5 pitching prospects in baseball at one point in time. You're getting him at pick 263. He's your 7th pitcher now when you're looking at the market. Yeah, I'll take that stab.
Talking through Jeff Erickson's late round starting pitchers to target in fantasy baseball this season. Jeff, tell me about Robbie Snelling down in Miami. Some concern that he might not be on the opening day roster, but what is selling you on the upside?
That's right. The Marlins signed Chris Paddock, and they said that, hey, Paddock's got a spot in this rotation. Paddock was once one of those hyped guys that we're talking about, but now he's kind of been through the ringer a little bit. He's now that boring veteran that nobody really wants to see taking up that spot. But Robbie Snelling came over to the Marlins in the Tanner Scott trade. The Marlins cleaned up his delivery, his setup. He added some velocity. He can top out at 99 miles an hour. He works typically around 95 or so. Fun to watch. Had a dominant spring training debut against the Mets. That was fun to see. Massive 26.0 K minus walk percentage at AAA. So huge strikeouts, not very many walks. That's the best of all worlds there. He's competing against Paddock, maybe against Max Meyer. Maybe he doesn't begin the season on the opening day rotation. But again, that's why it's costing you pick 300. The Marlins have cleared the deck. They traded Edwin Cabrera to the Cubs. So that's one less starting pitcher in this rotation. Sandy Alcantara might be a trade candidate at some point in time as well. As the Marlins keep on building this young repertoire of young, good starting pitchers, they also have another prospect, Thomas White, that you want to keep an eye on as well, that you get even later in drafts. Snelling, if he doesn't make the opening day rotation, that's fine. Maybe that, and that sort of talk is giving us this price. If you get the news that, hey, he's going to make the team, oh, he signed this long-term contract extension, his price goes up 100 picks. So get him now while you can.
All right, we're digging even deeper here, Jeff. We're talking well after pick 300 on the ADP, the average draft position for Jacob Lopez of the Athletics.
Yes, the Athletics, not the Sacramento Athletics, not the Oakland Athletics, not the Las Vegas Athletics, just the Athletics. Tough ballpark to pitch in. This is one of the reasons why he comes so cheaply. Sutter Home Health Park is a tough park to pitch in. A lot of fly balls go for home runs in right field in particular. But it's interesting. Jacob Lopez has been able to beat the ballpark. He's got significant home road reverse splits where he's much better at home than he is on the road. I say reverse because of that nature, because of that ballpark. Typically, pitchers do better at home. So that is one thing that you want the pitchers that can throw in that home ballpark. again, we're chasing strikeouts here with Jacob Lopez. 29.3% strikeout percentage last year at the big league level. Came over to the A's in the trade with the Rays, where the Rays got Joe Boyle. The concern with Lopez is health and a little bit of the fly ball tendencies. But again, at pick 344, if it doesn't work out, you cut him and move on. It's very easy to do that. There will be pitchers that emerge on the waiver wire. You want to take high upside gambles at picks at this late in the draft. Try to see if you can get that high strikeout guy, because we're always chasing strikeouts in our fantasy leagues.
Well, I think that applies to the final player on your list, Jeff. Andrew Painter of the Philadelphia Phillies obviously did not play at all in 2023 or 2024. You know, some ups and downs, mostly downs at AAA last season. Are you willing to jump in later in the draft?
I am. I'm excited to see Andrew Painter. He's going to make his spring training debut on Sunday against the Yankees. It's been two full years since we've seen him pitch. Three full years since we've seen him pitch in spring training. Did pitch in AAA last year. He did struggle, but averaged over strikeout per inning at AAA. Some issues with the command, and that usually happens after a pitcher coming back from Tommy John. I expect a decent strikeout upside, and again, the price is so nice. High pedigree pitcher. We're talking about a guy that might have been the number one pitching prospect in baseball. Still only 22 years old.
Before we give you our best bets of the night and send you on your way, I just want to remind you that you're not going to want to turn the channel here. Money Moves with Stormy Bonatoni and JVT coming your way next. Greg Hoops Peterson going to join the show with his best bets in college hoops tonight. Mitch Moss, Pauly Howard coming your way at 4 p.m. Eastern for Follow the Money. And then it's VSiN Primetime, as always, 7 p.m. Eastern. Tim Murray and Matt Youmans on the mics. Jeff, I need a best bet. I have a feeling you are going over to the NBA. What do you like?
Yeah, going to the NBA suites. Kawhi Leonard is questionable with his ankle. It's been something he's been dealing with for a while. Benedict Mathurin is someone that's already been a bigger part of the rotation anyhow for the Clippers after his trade. I'm going over 20.5 points. You get that minus 115 over at Hard Rock. Mathurin has gone 21, 26, and 38 points in his last three games.
So I mentioned the Jrue Holiday over 29.5 PRA earlier in the show. We're going to lock that one in. Minus 110 over at BetMGM. Couple bonus plays here that we didn't get to earlier. Precious Achiuwa over 7.5 rebounds at plus 105. Don't mind the over 17.5 points plus boards tonight going up against Dallas. Some absences in that front court. And then Alperen Şengün looking at the over 19.5 points for him against the Orlando Magic. This one sitting at 20.5 at virtually every other book. So over at BetMGM, 19.5 points minus 120. That's going to wrap up the Thursday edition of Prop Points here on the Sports Betting Network. Don't go anywhere. Money Moves, Stormy Bonatoni, Jonathan Von Tobel coming your way next. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. Copious NBA games on the schedule again tonight. Very excited about that. We've got the DeAndre Ayton revenge game here coming with the Lakers and the Suns. So, hey, we got to frame it when we got to get that narrative going. Let's actually go get some actual real betting angles. We turn to Nick for that. I create phony narratives. That's my job here. Nick, what do we got here in the Lakers-Suns tonight? What do you like?
Yeah, well, I'm staying away from the side here, Jeff. I've been burned by the Lakers way too many times over the last couple of weeks. Like them, you know, at home against Orlando the other night. And that did feel like kind of a breaking point type of game for LA. You know, in the last 48 hours, I've just seen a lot of like, what is wrong with the LA Lakers? Why does the offense look as clunky as it does? And you mentioned DeAndre Ayton, who, you know, put up some nice numbers in that game. It's been a very empty season for DeAndre Ayton, a lot of disappearing act type of games. You know, there was a report that after that game, you know, he's running through the hallways saying they're trying to turn me into Clint Capella. It's like, yeah, that would be great, man. If you were peak Clint Capella, we would love that. We would absolutely love that if we're the LA Lakers. You're not even playing at a Clint Capella type of level. So the first thing that I was drawn to in this Lakers-Suns game is the total to me is interesting at 220.5, because we have a Suns team coming in, no Devin Booker, no Dylan Brooks. They are struggling right now on the offensive end. They've scored 81 and 77 points in their last two games, those against Boston and Portland. A little bit more understandable to put up 81 against Boston, the 77 against Portland. That's a little bit alarming. But this is the fourth matchup already this season between the Lakers and the Suns. The previous three have sailed way over this number. Lakers have been rough on both ends of late. Really bad loss to Orlando the other night. So I actually lean under on the total. You know, I think we do see, you know, the Lakers, they look bad defensively. The defensive numbers actually aren't quite as bad as you would think since the All-Star break. They're about middle of the pack. I think they will find ways to slow down this Suns team, which just doesn't really have a dominant offensive option. One prop that I do like in this game, though, Jeff, is Colin Gillespie over 15 and a half points. He's torched the Lakers a couple times already this season. Does tend to see a pretty significant jump in usage without Booker, without Dylan Brooks on the court. Lakers do give up a lot of threes as well. So pretty friendly number to me at 15 and a half on the points for Gillespie.
Yeah. Lakers coming into this as a road favorite, between 4.5 and 5.5, where I've seen in most places so far. Very interesting there. Suns have lost 6 out of the last 8. So, you know, the injuries are really starting to catch up with them as well. Plus this is a battle for the sixth spot in the West. So trying to get out of that play-in, this could have some impact on that. Hornets Pacers will not have any impact on that, at least on the Pacers side of things. Hornets, though, they're still a team playing pretty well. Maybe not the same sort of momentum as before, but still 7 out of the last 10, 1-2 in a row. They are currently the 10 seed in the East. What do you see in this game against the Pacers, who are clearly in their tanking bag right now?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Pacers have made it very clear what they'll be doing the way. And to give you an update on the injury report as of mid-afternoon, Pascal Siakam is doubtful. Almost never see guys go from doubtful to playing in the NBA. So he'll almost certainly be out. Ivica Zubac still out definitely. Aaron Nesmith, of course, Tyrese Haliburton out for Indiana. And then both Obi Toppin and Andrew Nemhard considered questionable. I mean, Pacers have still found ways to be scrappy, Jeff. I still think they're well coached. Yeah, I think Rick Carlisle probably hates how the season has gone for the Indiana Pacers, but understands the bigger vision here. On the Charlotte side of things, this is the final game of a 3-game road trip. They've blown out Chicago and Washington the last two games. I don't love the number here, you know, 13 and a half on the road, but this Hornets team is playing with a ton of confidence. I do think it's an interesting defensive matchup. However, the Pacers are very bad, not debating that, but the one thing they are doing really well, Jeff, is they are holding teams down from beyond the arc. They're allowing the second fewest three-point attempts per game in the NBA over the last 10. This Hornets team, meanwhile, is taking 47 threes per game. Whether it's Brandon Miller, LaMelo Ball, Con Kadipple, these guys are firing away every single night. So the Hornets are taking 47 per game. The Pacers are allowing 32 per game. I'm very interested to see, you know, which side kind of wins out there. I'm looking at Musa Diabate in the prop market. Indiana has been a horrible rebounding team. They're kind of out of options at center. Jay Huff is a very poor rebounder. He's kind of a perimeter Brooke Lopez-y type of guy. So I think this should be a spot where we could see Diabate easily work his way into double digits on the boards. He's not a big time scorer, but if we can just get somewhere between 8 and 12 points out of Diabate, I think he can go over on that 18 and a half points plus boards.
Yeah. By the way, the Toppin note is interesting. He's only played 3 games all year. Yeah. And just like a week ago, Carlisle said it'd be quote unquote a while before he'd return. But, you know, that he's been updated, that listing is questionable as an upgrade. So just note on that you might get him. That might be the guy that does come back this week for this game there. So that would change a little bit of the rebounding picture at the very least. It may be the off season, but on DraftKings, football never sleeps. Early bird best ball is back, and you can get in now to compete for a share of $1 million in total prizes before the season even kicks off. Best ball is simple. You draft your team once, and that's it. Each week, your highest scores automatically count. No waivers, no trades, no lineup setting. Just build your squad and let it ride all season long. If you love drafting, this is your edge to get started early. Download the DraftKings Daily Fantasy app and draft your early bird best ball lineup for a shot at a share of $1 million in prizes. Drafts stay open until the season kicks off, so now's the time to jump in. You draft it, we crown it. Sign up now to take your shot at a share of $1 million in prizes on DraftKings Early Bird Best Ball Contest. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. 18 plus in most states, restrictions apply. Terms are at DraftKings.com, sponsored by DraftKings. Blazers, Bulls. The Bulls on a rough spot, lost 10 in a row. Blazers have had some key injuries here as well. What do you like in this game, Nick?
Yeah, I think it's got to be cathartic in some ways if you're a Bulls fan to see this team, you know, finally embracing the tank and yet probably doing it a little bit too late. They did it like 3 weeks later than they should have. They won way too many games, and now they're clearly trying to lose as much as they can. But I think they're the best they could do is like the seventh or eighth worst record. But it's important to recognize that, yeah, Chicago has joined the tank. They have not been overly competitive over this last stretch. Like you said, they've lost 10 in a row in that span. They are the worst net rating team in the NBA by a fair margin. I mean, we're talking like 4 points per 100 worse than the Brooklyn Nets and the Sacramento Kings. They are the second worst defense in the NBA in that span, and they are the second worst offense. So this is a primo matchup for the Portland Trailblazers. They're only 4.5-point road favorites. Now, no Denny Avdia tonight for Portland. That's a big absence. That turns my attention, Jeff, to Jrue Holiday. And I'm looking at the points, rebounds, assists for Holiday over 29.5. Again, Bulls 29th at defensive rating. They're still a top 10 team in pace, and they're a bottom five rebounding team. This is a perfect storm for the opposing team to rack up stats. They're also giving up by far the most assists in the NBA, and that's been the case for a month plus now. If you use our on-off tools over at rotowire.com, with Avdia off the court, Jrue Holiday on the court, his usage rate jumps up about 6 percentage points on the year, so about 26.2% on the usage rate for Jrue Holiday. Per 36 minutes, he's averaging 23 points, almost 8 assists, and 6 rebounds per 36. Does he get to 36 minutes tonight? We will see, but we have some leeway here with this number. So give me the over 29.5 on the PRA for Jrue Holiday.
I like it. I like it a lot. Heat Sixers, a game that has some heft. Both teams are jockeying for position in the East. We saw Joel Embiid come back on Monday against the Pacers. Looks like we'll get him again for tonight's game. What do you like in this game, Nick?
Yeah, this is a really interesting one. And we did have an addition to the injury report. Norman Powell, who was not on it this morning in the last hour, has been added as questionable. So potentially two starters sidelined tonight for Miami, with Davion Mitchell also listed as questionable. Heat now a 2.5-point dog on the road. I'm looking at this and kind of reading into the injury report here as a Tyler Hero spot. I think we're getting a really good number on Hero assists, over 3.5 at -103. Again, if Davion Mitchell is out there, if Powell is out there, if both are out there, this becomes a little bit dicier. But these are two fast-paced teams. Heat are number one in the NBA in pace. Sixers are top 10 as well. Philly, bottom five in terms of assists allowed over the last 10 games. We do expect Joel Embiid to be out there, made his return earlier this week against Indy. So, you know, that does push me a little bit more toward Philadelphia if you're looking at a side here. But this is more of a prop spot for me. Tyler Hero has been racking up assists over his last couple of games, and I will take the bait on what feels like a very low number at 3.5.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. Pelicans, Jazz, Tankathon, point, you know, Tankathon Bowl 27. Would you like anything in this game?
Yeah, man, I've been saying all week, I like these tanking on tanking games. And I should note, with all respect to the Pelicans, they are not tanking. They made it very clear that, hey, we don't want to be this bad. We're playing right. Our guys.
They're just bad.
Zion Williamson's played 33 games in a row, Jeff Erickson. They got DeJounte Murray back in the mix. So I actually look at this as a Pel spot. I thought it was interesting. Murray came out earlier this week and gave a pretty impassioned interview about, look, we're not just going to lay down. I'm not just running around out here to prepare for next season. Like, we want to push for the 10 spot in the West. I don't think that's going to be realistic, but that's at least the direction that this Pelicans team is going to take. So give me the Pels to cover the 5.5. No Markkanen, no Keyonte George tonight for the Jazz. Don't mind Ace Bailey over 5.5 boards on the Utah side if you want a prop. And then Zion Williamson over 24.5, another spot I'm looking at.
Yeah, I really like going up against Utah. I think that's been a good spot to do. And now with Markkanen definitely out, not just even questionable, I think that's a great spot to be in. We're going to move the topic over to the NFL. John McKechnie is going to join us on the Progressive Guest Line coming up next here on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Thursday edition of Prop Points rolling along here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Also streaming along live over on SiriusXM channel 158. We're going to head out to the Progressive Guest Line, bring on our guy from rotowire.com, our NFL analyst, John McKechnie. You can check him out on Twitter at Johns_tailgate, doing a lot of work in the early best ball streets these days. And John, you are one of our NFL draft gurus at RotoWire as well. NFL combine coverage starting up in about an hour and a half, 3 p.m. Eastern this afternoon over on NFL Network. I know this is a big weekend for you, John. We already have some measurements trickling in, and we'll get a lot more information on these top prospects over the next few days. I want to start out looking at the running backs in this 2026 draft. We know about Jeremiah Love. He'll almost certainly be a first-round pick, if not a top 15 pick. But I'll ask you a very simple question, John. Who is the RB2 in this class beyond Jeremiah Love?
I'm going to hazard a guess and say it was the Notre Dame RB2, and that would be Jadarian Price right behind Jeremiah Love. I feel like he's someone that has a really explosive skill set, still kind of an incomplete grade as far as the pass catching ability is concerned, returned some kicks during his time in South Bend, very effective runner, you know, established like a 6.0 yards per carry figure over the last 2 years behind Jeremiah Love, like 17 rushing touchdowns in a pretty short sample. So he's somebody that I think can really solidify his stock this weekend. I think there's a lot of reason to believe based on film and production to where it's like, okay, we're checking all the boxes as far as height, weight, speed, broad jump, all that good stuff. I think Price is going to be that guy that sort of turns heads this weekend. And if he's not already number two running back on most boards, I think he will leave the weekend as such.
We have historical precedents of two running backs from the same college in the same draft class and having it work out and both become decent pros, including last year, obviously with the two Ohio State running backs.
Sure. You could also look at Sony Michel and Nick Chubb, you know, as example, or the, you know, that great group of Arkansas guys with McFadden and Peyton Hillis and Felix Jones. So, I mean, this is not completely uncharted territory that we're talking about here when it comes to this potential. And I just feel like this is a class that it's short on top end talent. And I think that you're going to be kind of like betting on traits more than anything for the next running back to come off the board after Jeremiah Love. And I don't know if anyone else really checks those boxes the same way that Jadarian Price does. I think you look a little bit closer at some of the other potentials. I think that some people are in on Jonah Coleman out of Washington, like a very compact runner, 5'9", like over 220 pounds. So he's someone that can move the pile, definitely like a power first type of running back. He's going to need to sort of just tread water as far as his 40 time is concerned. Like, I think I have more of a sinking feeling that he might turn in a 40 time that moves him down this weekend than one where like he turns out to be this big workout warrior. So as long as he's running in the sub 4.55s or something like that, he should still remain in that day two conversation. And Emma Johnson out of Nebraska, also a guy that has a more well-rounded skill set than the guys that I was mentioning, almost 300 touches this past year at Nebraska, 50 of them were receptions. So, I mean, that, you know, kind of proven ability as both a runner as a pass catcher coming out. So I feel like if he has a good combine, he's also going to get himself into that day two mix. But again, as it stands, Price is my guy right now.
Talk with our friend John McKechnie, one of our NFL analysts over at RotoWire, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. John, we don't have a ton out there right now as far as NFL draft betting markets. I think those will become significantly more populated once we get past the combine this week. But over at FanDuel right now, we do have a market up for the second overall pick. Not a lot of action right now on the number one overall pick, but I know you have some thoughts here. The Jets, of course, are holding that pick, and they just traded a defensive end earlier today, bringing in Devondre Sweat from the Tennessee Titans. So tell us who you like as a potential number two overall pick, including a long shot that you're keeping an eye on.
Right. So the Jets definitely cleared the runway, so to speak, to go after an edge with the second overall pick in this draft. Right now, the odds look like David Bailey out of Texas Tech by way of Stanford is checking in as that next guy. Potentially Arvel Reset out of Ohio State, another guy that I think is the slight favorite right now. But Bailey, you can get at plus 125. His production, I thought, was superior to Reese's this past year. If you watch the film with Reese, like you can really dream on him turning into something kind of unbelievable at the NFL level, but we haven't quite seen it yet. I really was disappointed in the way that he disappeared in that game against Miami that ultimately, you know, finished off Ohio State's season. So I definitely understand it with Reese, and it's not a bad price necessarily, but I do think that David Bailey, by the time that this weekend is over, he's firmly going to be in that mix. So I think plus 125 is a pretty decent price for him. If you want to get a little bit crazier with it, another piece of that Ohio State defense, Caleb Downs. I think if you're just doing a big board, talent alone in this class, Caleb Downs is a very good argument to be the second best player in this class. You don't see safeties play the way that he does very often. I think, you know, you look at difference makers like Kyle Hamilton in the league and so on, like they don't come along very often. Now, there's not a lot of precedent by that same token of safeties getting drafted inside the top five. So that would probably be a bit of a head scratcher for people. But if Downs tests as well as I think he can, based on his track record, both at Alabama and Ohio State, watch the film. He's an unbelievable player. I wouldn't blame the Jets for taking him at two, but it would be a little bit surprising. That's baked into the odds. But again, if you want a little bit of a realistic long shot, I think you could do worse than Downs at 40-1.
John, Fernando Mendoza is the clear number one pick, number one quarterback. There's not a certain second quarterback in this draft. Who's your QB2 and does he go in the first round?
Oof. Yeah, this is a really tough quarterback class. And like, I don't even know if we're going to get the same thing that we did a year ago where it's like, okay, we're going to get Cam Ward at one and then who knows? And then, you know, you see the Giants trade back into the first round to grab Jackson Dart there at the very end. And then Tyler Shuck goes in the early part of the second round. I'm not even sure that we get that level of second quarterback in this class. Right now, it seems like the odds on favorite would be Ty Simpson out of Alabama. But I think a lot of that just has to do with the fact that Dante Moore is going back to school. Trinidad Chambliss got another year in school. So for me, the safe bet right now would be Simpson. And just knowing the way that the NFL teams operate and the NFL draft operates, the second quarterback is probably going to be taken in the first round. You know, right or wrong, I think that that's just probably a kind of a likely scenario. I will be interested to see how Carson Beck and Garrett Nussmeier both kind of make their impressions on teams this weekend. Those are the only other guys that I see really having like any sort of, you know, leverage or potential to really kind of solidify themselves as that next guy beyond Fernando Mendoza. As far as like guys who could wow people with their physical traits this weekend, a la Anthony Richardson a few years ago, it's not the exact same. Keep an eye on Talen Green out of Arkansas. That's all I'll say. Really athletic, really strong arm, big prototypical frame. I think he's someone that like in this particular setup, like a combine, like where you're just looking at those physical tools, Greens are pretty loud.
Folks, if you're betting college hoops, now is the time to get your edge. Right now, you can get VSiN Pro access through May 1st for just $29.99 with our Hoops Mania special. VSiN Pro gives you daily best bets, real-time betting splits for both DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop tools, and full access to every VSiN show on demand. You'll also get our March Mania betting guide, which is packed with team breakdowns, betting trends, future strategies, and all the picks you can handle from VSiN's top analysts. If you're planning to bet college hoops, bet the NCAA tournament, VSiN Pro gives you a real edge. Sign up now over at VSiN.com/subscribe. We have our friend John McKechnie, NFL analyst at RotoWire, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. John, before we take you out, I do want to get your take on some news that's kind of been bubbling beneath the surface for a few weeks now, starting to get a little bit louder. Sounds like Derek Carr wants back in on the NFL next season. Now, the caveat here is that the Saints hold his rights. He wants to play for a competitive team. Is there an obvious fit out there for Derek Carr?
It is very funny for Derek Carr in the year 2026 to be kind of flexing that type of muscle, right? Like he's like, I'm only going to come back if I'm playing for, if I'm going to be the guy that takes you to the Super Bowl. Like, buddy, I'm pretty sure the Dolphins will call you. I'm pretty sure like the Vikings would consider you as like the insurance policy behind JJ McCarthy. I'm not sure you're getting much beyond that. Like you're the Sam Darnold type of career path. I don't think that's in the cards for Derek Carr, who, you know, was a declining player by the time that he stepped away last season. I don't think that, you know, his idea of himself right now versus the reality are really all that in line. So I think that he will be back in the league, but I don't think he's going to get his wish as far as taking over a competitive team.
We'll see, man. I think this might be the right year to jump in. You got a bad quarterback draft class. You got 8 or 9 teams, quarterback needy. I think Minnesota, I think Pittsburgh could be potential fits for Derek Carr. We'll see, you know, what the Saints are willing to receive to let him choose his next team. John McKechnie, everybody joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Check him out over at rotowire.com. Fantasy baseball late round pitching targets coming your way next. Jeff Erickson is going to reveal his list when we come back.